People can be needed by the spouse, by the child, by the project, workaholic. In this case, or by situation. Give me signs. All of you will do this. So, me, because I will codependence anthem. All that tough. I feel all that pressure. Once I became aware of this, about once every 2 months, I'll walk around the house. So there's all up here, all this. And I stop and I start laughing and it's all gone instantly. It's all a mental thing. I need pressure. I feel this. Right now, try to remember the pressure that was important for you, the five most important pressureful things last November. They were big when I walked through them, I'm going to tell you. They were all crises. My world. They were only Mount Everest. Every one of those things. They're there, and they're so big. They're so massive. I got to scale them. I got to feel that need so I can feel needed by the situation. To handle it by accomplishments, by strokes. All addictive behavior is shame-based. Compulsive eating, compulsive drinking, compulsive drugging, compulsive gambling, compulsive sex, compulsive talking, all of it. All, that's 100%. This, what we're talking about now, is the root problem. And let me tell you why it becomes so important. Next week, the topic that I'm talking to doctors in a hospital on is you don't necessarily do an alcoholic a favor when you get them to stop drinking. Now, you're silly, but it doesn't to an alcoholic. I can guarantee that if 17 years ago you stopped me from drinking by putting a straitjacket on, it would have been the single most cruel thing you could have done. Allowing me to die of alcoholism or cirrhosis would have been better than putting me in that straitjacket, because you would leave me with a sense of no value and no way to get it. And that's all that happens. You take the alcohol out. And see, what happens with alcoholics is they stop drinking. And this is what happened to me. Within 2 to 3 years, my compulsive eating exploded. Then I started getting into sick relationships. Not sexual, but sick friendships. Needing to be needed. And you have one, the stop drinking, the gambling explodes. I'm not a gambler. The way I said it, it's the only compulsion I've never seen in my life, but I'll lay odds I could pick it up any day without any problem. By gambling normally, I really just don't. But I mean, you see, if all you do is get somebody to say no, and there's shame based here, some other problem has to go somewhere else. You've got to come in and attack the root problem. And that's what we're on. What's the therapy? You got to give them the blessing. No, you got to get the blessing. And hope this does strong, but it can't come direct from God. It has to come through another person or a group. They got to get the blessing. And I don't have simple solutions on where everybody's going to get it. One reason that if you just stop the person from using, they almost always return. Weight Watchers is a real rat. Maybe somebody's employed by me. Got to be careful. I hope not. I don't want to attack anything in that sense. But see, if all you do is you take, well, what Weight Watchers does, it teaches to lose weight. And it even keeps the binge and going. They just get you off the cake and they put you on oranges. Well, I didn't put two inches around my waist eating oranges. That wasn't my problem. It was eating that was my problem. And they kept me eating. I didn't go to Weight Watchers, but I've heard it. They keep you eating until you get down to the weight you want. But you haven't attacked. Nothing is done for this inner sense that's not feeling good enough. Or you get down and you feel thin. But anorexics will tell you never really feel thin enough. And sooner or later, that emptiness is in here. That's not being good enough. Bulimia, incidentally, and anorexia are both briefly described here. Books out for them, but they are totally shame-based also, both of them completely. And boy, they're like some of the serious problems that I'm walking through. They really need some therapy as well as some other things kind of to help the person get the sense of value. So if you just take the problem out, you're still leaving it in here. You don't help the person by praising. Now, I wish this were so. Hearing what I share, the first thing you're going to want to do is all go home and praise your kids. Call them up and say, boy, you're great. It won't work. That's why I told you when Father Levin was praising you, he meant it. Inside, this little paper. Oh, but if you really knew. If you really knew what? If you really knew. See, I'm plotting this. I'm feeling. I feel like I don't deserve what you're saying. So it boomerangs. It bounces out. Now, if you critique me, that's even worse. The worst is to ignore me. That's absolute death to almost anybody, to be completely ignored. The blessing can only come from a person, and at first it really isn't done verbally. You don't do it by saying it. You do it by just being there and accepting it. What happens is somehow you start entering a real relationship. I'm going to jump and maybe have a few minutes at the end to talk about relationships and why codependents have a lot of trouble with relationships. Let me tell you what a real healthy relationship is. First, it would be between you and your husband, you and any of your children, you and a friend. First, you have to have the freedom to feel. If I'm angry, I must be able to feel anger. Secondly, now this will sound the same to you, I have to have the freedom to be aware of my feelings. I can feel and block it. Third, I must be free enough to express how I feel. I'm uptight right now. I am a little bit. I'm enjoying the evening, but I'm still a little bit uptight. Fourth, I have to have the freedom to stay and be open to listen to your response to what I've described. Now, if two people can do that, their relating, their being with each other can constantly grow more intimate. See, it's very sad for me to see how we live in John Wayne America. One of the saddest people I've ever had to visit who was sick was an ex-priest, good, very good man, had married with permission, and he was rather young. They had operated on him, opened him up, saw he was filled with cancer, and sewed him up. The next day, I walked in his room, and he and his wife were there, and they both had plastic smiles on for each other, pretending everything was happy. That was so artificial, I couldn't stay around him. And he couldn't die with peace. They could not let each other see pain. People can only allow each other to see strain. We have this macho myth that a man can't let his wife see his tears and his hurt. You have to be able to feel, to be aware of your feeling, to express your feeling, and to listen to the response. When two people can continually do that, they're really growing. They're becoming intimate more and more and more. That's real intimacy. Okay. That's, in a sense, how the blessing is given. Somebody comes to see me and they start talking. And I just sit there. And they feel comfortable. And I have to have the blessing to do this. I got it from a bunch of alcoholics when I was shortly sober. That's the day that I remember. I woke up and I felt good inside and I said, I've never felt good before. Incidentally, there was one other thing about codependency I was going to tell you and I forgot. It's when my mind blanked out. The codependent years old, I have a single memory of having cried once in my life. Codependence, and that's in this a group therapy. There's a psychiatrist has several groups, and he has short quotes all the way through the book. More than two-thirds of them have shut down their feelings. I stood at my dad's grave when I was 21 years old and wondered why I didn't feel anything. I know today why I didn't. I'm codependent. I took a little bit of guilt for not feeling anything when they buried my dad. Today I know that I wasn't responsible for that. I had, because of my mom, shut down that whole part of the soil, and all those feelings are buried. I still watch that. I watch that I don't react the way what I would call a healthy, nice person does. I don't feel the joy often that other people do, and I don't feel the sorrow other people do. And then I right away want to judge myself, and no, I'm not responsible for that. It's still being stuffed. And oh, and free your... So... completely. It's so angry because watch their feel anger at all. They explode in violence. Just so they get mad. If they could feel that anger, they'd never have to get violent because the anger would be coming up and coming up all the time. So anyway, somebody comes to see me and they sit down and they tell me that, you know, what they're doing. And I just sit there and I sit and I have an innocent and I'm looking at it. And they tell me something that they've done that wasn't too nice. And I just sit there and look at them. They get a sense that they're okay. Even though they have done this, they're okay. And so either then or later they come back and they tell me a little more. And I just sit there and I listen. And they still get a sense that they're okay. Now there may be one or two blocks, the biggies that they got to get out. And they sandwich those and they muffle them in between everything else and they say, and I just sit there and I look at them and I still accept it. And that gives them a sense that they're okay. That's how they get the blessing. Now see, a mother who looks at a kid doesn't approve what he does, but she has her own value. But communicate you're okay. Or, like if a husband and wife start seeing a dark, you're okay. Things like I called my sponsor up once and told him something I did, and I said, but his tone of voice was what was really important. What he shared was, that's wrong, you're okay. Even though not everything I do is okay, I can still remain okay. And if I remember that, then I can improve my life. A therapist, a counselor, therefore, can give the blessing by simply sitting there and listening. I can't force someone to open. And if they don't want to open, they'll walk out saying, you know, if they come up and they give me a nice line, but they hide the real thing. They walk out with that message I told you is so deadly for me. Yeah, but if they really knew. See, when I go somewhere to talk, I got to tell them how I feel that day. And if I'm feeling down, I got to tell them, I really feel lousy today. And you hate doing that. You know, people don't want to spend a lot of money, fly up to London, Ontario, and you're going to stand up and say, I feel lousy today. But if I don't tell them that, and people stand up, like I told you, you know, with those talks, you get a standing ovation. They all stand up, give you the standing ovation. I walk out feeling worse. Because I'm saying, yeah, but you would. Then when I tell them, and it's in a general way, hey, I flew up here, and it happened. It was one of the two Canadian talks I had to tell them I didn't feel. It was the second one. I didn't feel good. I wasn't feeling on the top of the world. A lot of things were upset, and there's sort of things that aren't all together. I'm not feeling too good. And they all sit there, and nobody walked out. Nobody threw anything at me. You know, there wasn't no tomatoes hit me, anything. And they stood up. Well, you could feel it, though. The communication was coming. When I slowly let you know really who I am, then I don't have to play that tape if you really knew. So counseling, the counselor can't make it work, but can encourage it. Just sitting there and just basically not reacting. You know, you don't do that. That ruins the whole thing. You're done right there. It's shot down. And sometimes, I mean, not that one. Most of our parishioners know this. My hardest thing is my sense of humor wants to bubble up every so. And it would be completely inappropriate, and you have to stay and listen. I think I've told you all the greatest. No, I haven't told you the whole story. The gal that wanted to marry me and keep me as a kept man. You're going to get the story finally. It's all in my whole alcoholic talk. To go, I went to Albuquerque. I'll remind you of the story. I get there, and this beautiful gal wants to see me. So we meet in the bedroom of we meet in the bedroom of somebody's home, okay? And we start talking, and she asked me to marry her. And I didn't say anything, and then she said, well, if you won't marry me, can I put you up as a kept man? That still intrigues me. I don't find that so fascinating. Now, let me tell you the background story. She was 6 months sober and a functioning prostitute. Good looking enough that she gave some guy back $8,000 because she really didn't want to do what he wanted to do that night. She could have put me up as a kept man. She had listened to some tapes of mine, and they gave her a sense of dignity. She wanted to say thanks. And she wanted the thanks to be more than shaking a hand and going away. And what's the only language that a prostitute knows? Why do you want to have sex with me so I can prove myself to you? She was saying thanks by the proposition to marry. Now, I already knew what she did. They told me this, and so did everybody in her group. And I didn't react. I didn't laugh at her. I didn't put her down. It didn't make any difference. I don't have to approve what she does. I have to see that who she is important. And then when she asked, put me up as a kept man, I didn't laugh. 6 months later, she wasn't a prostitute anymore. And see, all this ties together. All of us in one form or another have sold ourselves for things. We've prostituted ourselves. It may not have been literally for sex and money, but I've sold myself out 1,000 ways. What's wrong with prostitution, in God's view, is it keeps the prostitute. See, I'm worth the universe. That's what God tells me. That's the dignity I have. But if I sell myself for some drugs, I've done that. My popularity, my prestige, my honor. If I sell myself for some approval, I've done that. I'm telling myself that's my value. And if that's what I'm telling myself, that's what I'm going to live. Now, how do I change? Not by being condemned for what I do, but by getting my sense of value. By somebody sitting and listening. And yeah, I was in a nice place that trip in Albuquerque. And it was a beautiful thing, and I saw it. And I saw it this way. And it really touched me that somebody would try to love it. You know, that a child could be so delicate that they don't know how to say love. She'd been so immature. This was her only way to say, I like you. Thank you. And you listen to it, and you just sit there, and you appreciate it. And she gets a sense of value. And, you know, within 6 months, either the value has to go or the prostitution has to go. And in her case, thank goodness, the prostitution went. That's how it's communicated. But see, you have to, sooner or later, get to the fact. If somebody comes in, not the first interview, but if they got that biggie there and they never bring it up, they're never really going to feel the blessing, because ultimately they're going to feel, yeah, but if you really knew. Might take a while, and it's not an immediate thing, and it can't be a first-time thing, but more and more and more. And you just sit there. You share more and more with each other. Those of you who have the real working marriages, the intimacy occurs. In a general way, you let each other not hear the things you've done, but you really let each other see the kind of nature you have, and you become more intimate, and it's okay. You share your darker side, and it's still okay, and the blessing is given. More and more and more. And the communication comes in, I'm okay. So it can be done by a therapist. It can be done by a friend. It can be done by a husband and wife. It can be done by a group. This, incidentally, is how Alcoholics Anonymous starts working. Everybody else has been down on it. And when the first alcoholics come to talk to him, he thinks that they're going to want his whole confession. And it's so funny. When I talk to a drinking drunk, and he feels he's got to come to, I say, oh, shut up. I know. Let me tell you what I've done. I start promising I'm never going to drink. I don't want to hear you talking to me because you felt all this guilt and pressure. I know what it's like to feel guilt and pressure and to break every promise you've ever made. The one thing I want you to walk out at least as free as you came in. So I don't want you to make any promises to me. I want you to take back everyone you've ever made. I just want you to... In this way, slowly, he starts feeling he understands. He understands. He understands. I have a funny experience.
what? It's like, first, the days you take it, I'm really recommending it. Now it's time to get this to be.
And that's how people shift. If only I get her, it'll all be okay. He says, you know what a healthy person does in a relationship? You got to realize if you're dumb and you fall in love, you know what you are? Dumb and in love. If you're out of work and you fall in love, you're out of work in love. If you're dull and you fall in love, you're dull in love. Nothing changes, but you're in love. That's all. Now, what does a truly blessed person do in a relationship? And it's absolutely different. I know when I'm at peace, that there is goodness in me that I can give to you. And so I want to enter a relationship for what I can offer to you. And Gorski's single statement is, first the self, then the possibility of a relationship. I got to put myself together first before you and I can ever have a healthy relationship. And I have to do that. Otherwise, I will use you, and I've done that, drained from you, everything else. Last thing, and this will be the last thing, you can give me the blessing. I told you it cannot come directly from God. But once you have opened the door, then the ultimate complete fullness of the blessing comes from meditation. Not prayer, meditation. It's experiencing God actually loving you. And we don't do much about that in the church. I've asked that several times. How many sermons in any church have you ever heard on how to meditate? I had a Protestant friend who said once in a lifetime. I've tried to talk about it a few times here. I wonder, you know, maybe once outside of me. Lots on prayer. Prayer is what you say to God. There's this Catholic priest who does this funny little thing for alcoholics called, he's Joe Martin. And he says, can you just picture God getting ready for Sunday morning in heaven? So I'll put the earmuffs on, all the pads about. Come on, you know, just umbrellas down there, just this huge barrage of prayers. He doesn't need to hear all that. He knows. If God is what we say, if God knows what's in our heart, he doesn't need for us to say it. The reason to pray is out, so now we're ready to listen. And meditating is when you hear God looking at you and like saying, Norma, my universe really can't be complete without you. And you feel it inside. And you know somehow that's true. And it's the most wonderful feeling in life. The simpler they are, the better they are for me. My present meditations would be just picturing me and Jesus sitting at a table across from each other in a restaurant. And I just look at what's in his eyes. Sometimes I feel love. Show you how this one went. I just feel like, because it had to start here, but I already had a little bit of the blessing. I could just picture my God loving me. Then it shifted, and he had faith. Now, faith is trust. God had absolute trust, faith, that Larry will be Larry. Because he made me. He knows it. That upset me. It was harder than the love. Then, if you're our parishioners, I hope you remember this. God has absolute confidence that Larry will be Larry. That was rougher. Then came the worst. Once in the meditation, I just kind of picture Jesus reaching over to touch me in friendship because he liked me. And that was the hardest of all to take. Now that's the ultimate answer to codependency. That's the blessing carried to its fullness. And no one having that lacks the blessing anymore. And to the degree that they have that, they will say no. When I really feel this goodness, honestly, there is no way that I want to be touched by alcohol or drugs because they will only cheapen something that I searched for in them and never found, or in any of the other things. It's the ultimate, ultimate answer to all of it. Any questions? There'll be a test Sunday at Mass. Okay, thank you. No, you didn't get a 91-minuter. You only stand when they go 91.